Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
Oh no, but lie. Back in April 2023, things got bad as they could be. I remember Bud Light. Uh-oh, Bud Light. Like a train wreck in a movie scene. But this is not to drill or make believe. Major meltdown of Bud Light. Find a way out of the corner that you put yourself in. Stand by. Looks like you spent that bonus much too soon. Oh no, but light. Carefully dropping words like freedom now. But the only sales are ones that pull you out. Dire straits for open life. The CEO broke down, calling for his mother, passing that old buck around. Is it any wonder on open life?
New head of marketing for Bud Light.
What is that?
This beer has a complex woke flavor that's hard to identify. It's a bit nutty one day and kind of fruity the next. But trust me, you'll love it.
Right now, there's a party going on at Heineken. Another's too. They couldn't buy a stroke of luck like this if they'd wanted to. Now you're bringing out the Clydesdale horse to pull your sinking ship back on its course. But it ain't working overnight. We've known your beer tastes just like bum bum for a while. The silver lining is less taste buds are now defiled. Oh no, but light. Oh no, but light. Ooh, oh no, but light. Oh no, but light.
Welcome to the Resolution Radio Network at resolutionrdo.com. You are listening to St. Thomas Show, and I am your host, St. Thomas. If you want to call in or listen now, it's 607-203-5423. It's area code 607-203-5423. You can follow us on various social media. We're on Wimkin, Getter, Gab, Twitter, and Telegram. And we just recently added TikTok at St. Thomas Show. And I'm not too happy with TikTok. I already, against my reluctance, but I see that a lot of younger generation millennials and stuff are really into it and stuff. And you can get a lot of information out there. And so I posted some pro-white stuff out there. And actually, I got a lot of positive feedback. But then all of a sudden, within probably less than an hour after I had posted some of the, even the memes that I had downloaded from a TikTok account were already being banned. For hate speech. So, I mean, it's obviously that medium isn't going to do it very good, but we thought we'd give it a shot just to see what's going on. But I'll make a couple of videos on there just to see if I can get some responses and stuff. But I don't trust it. But if that's a major medium to touch a younger generation's thing, hey, if I could be the Ron Paul for the millennials to get people to wake up on certain issues, then I've done my job. That's for sure. You can also follow us on Wimkin, Getter, Gab, and Telegram at Resolution RDO, and on Twitter at Resolution RDO number one. So my guest again this week is Jan Laprecht, and we always enjoy his commentary. He's there in Joburg there in South Africa, and he always has a unique perspective on not just what goes on in South Africa, but just in the West in general. So he has a lot of information and videos he puts out there that absolutely just crunch a lot of the data that's out there, and he's able to put the pieces together himself and make an incredible mosaic. That once you step away from the picture, you see it for what it is. And it's like, oh, shit. And that's why he's constantly under fire. So you can tell a man's enemies, tell a man by whose enemies are. And so obviously he's racked up a few, and he's wrapped up the Jews. So, I mean, pretty obviously he's scratched his fingernails on some chalkboards and gotten people's attention, which is a good thing. So definitely want to support people like him as well. Listen to what he has to say. And always, always share their content whenever possible, because of the fact that the internet can be compromised any given moment. So we can't take it for granted because of the fact that it can be compromised. And I just saw an app today as I was flipping through my news stories that, oh, you can take lyrics out of a song and just listen to the music. Well, yeah, okay. If you're already doing that, that means you can go and take you can take voiceover content off of a documentary and just leave the background shit, if there is any. So, I mean, we've seen that. Even Alex Jones talked about how they could go in there and it would take longer for him, but the AI could actually seek out his voice and destroy all that content in a matter of minutes. But because he's been putting out content for almost 30 years and it's been replicated so many times, it would take a lot longer to do it. But someone like me or someone like Jan, it'd probably be done in a matter of minutes, if not seconds, because, in fact, we just don't have as much content as someone he does. He dedicates 4+ hours of broadcast a day. At least 6 days a week. So, I mean, you know, don't take this stuff for granted. I said, if InfoWars or Daily Stormer goes down, we're all in it. And that now iconic mugshot of Donald Trump, I was just listening to another pro-white podcaster this morning, and they were doing some Q&A and stuff. And it's like, well, why people are considered armchair Nazis? Why don't they ever fucking actually get involved? Well, because the fact that we're about the doxing, they don't want to be a J6er, because see what's happening to those people. And ultimately, if they could do this to Trump and his entire lawyers, they can do it to anybody. This is turning into a banana republic, everybody. And now Biden's getting ready to push the mask mandates, and he's going to start doing a mandatory vaccine for every person in this fucking country. Okay, motherfucker, you've got your shot. You're going to get one from mine. You want my guns? Bullet first, bitch. So we need to start step up and tell this old fucking cracker he's got to go. And the worst part of it is that he is white. Regardless of the fact he's a quote-unquote Christian Zionist, he's setting a bad example for all whites to ever be elected in the White House ever again. So this is a very serious issue, everybody. Everybody needs to get off the fucking sidelines. This is no longer spectator sport. Jump on the field and get into the fray, because if not, what I'm saying, what Jan is saying, isn't going to matter. Because they're going to overwhelm all of us at once. And they're doing it culturally every day. So, Jan Laprecht, welcome back to the St. Thomas Show.
Hi there, Sonny. It's always an honor to be on your show. So, thank you very much.
Yes, and I get a chance. I'm going to do another roundtable discussion with you and a couple other members as well. Because of the fact that I've had some very good success bringing like-minded individuals together from different fields, different backgrounds. You have similar planks, or at least a similar passion for wanting to get the truth out. And it's always good to hear like-minded individuals come together, and who knows where it goes from there, because it's always usually positivity. But if we can all educate each other and also cross-pollinate on each other's programs, that's always a possibility.
Yeah, cross-pollination is good. Good.
It's important. I just recently got on a heathenist broadcast on a guy on focusfm.us, Bolt Odinson. I had him on the program talking more along with the religious perspective, but I was able to get on his program and cover a wide myriad of things, so I was able to educate a lot of his listeners not just on the stuff we do as far as the pagan religion, but also pop politics and how many of them intermarry because of the fact that in a lot of our cases, it's Christians here with always turning the other cheek and always being subservient, why we're losing this battle. And I agree with Barry Goldwater that we got to get the evangelicals out of the Republican Party, because that's one of the things that's really miring it down of actually doing anything, is because they are tolerant and they always turn the other cheek. And the Jews know this, and they've been manipulating that for at least the last century. So Netanyahu said it, as well as others. So they know that that's how they pacify a lot of dissent here, is by appealing to the Christian sensibilities, because we are a quote unquote Judeo-Christian country, which in the documents, it does not say anything to that that denomination at all. So, which is interesting, because Paul Harvey had done a program back in the early 90s, I think, and he talked about how many of the founding fathers actually weren't Christians. They were deists or agnostic altogether. So I thought that was pretty interesting that they weren't all Christian Americans like they're portrayed to be. So it's always interesting to find out the real backgrounds of historical figures. But, you know, you and I, Lane, have also learned from other individuals. Dennis Wise is a prime example. Really, what's a lot of the history is written by the victors. So we don't find out about the true causes of why the South seceded in 1861 here in this country, because, in fact, they don't want us to know. They think it's all perpetually about slavery. When really a lot of it's about terrorists and economic terrorism that the North is doing upon the South. Not to mention the true causes leading up to World War I, which is bullshit in the first place. It never should have happened. But more importantly, the outcome of that war led to Germany almost collapsing and almost being taken over by communists, was saved by National Socialism. And when we really start to look at the economic policies of the National Socialist government and what they did, that's why you don't hardly find any books on exactly the metrics on what they did, because the fact they don't want you to know. It's not goal-based, that it was actually labor-based. And when you really start to look at some of the ideas that they had, you know, it's obviously very contradictory to what we have here, but it's not controlled by the Jews, because they don't have a gold-backed central currency that you can manipulate by the banksters and under usury. So it's very interesting. Another reason why the National Socialist movement is so vilified is because how they changed the economic perspective, and it could not be easily compromised. So I know you're a fan of history, Jan. I don't know if you've actually maybe even studied some of the economics of how Germany was at a near collapse. They had almost 30% unemployment. And within 2 years, Chancellor Hitler had managed to completely revitalize the economy and also get almost every German working. And not only that, he created national pride once again in that country, while the rest of the West was still mired by the Great Depression. And thinking that social programs, like how we were doing it, that you can outspend a depression, whereas you have to actually put labor into things to make things happen. So what's your take on that, sir?
Yeah, you've spoken about many very interesting things. I'm going to quickly also just touch base on a couple of things you've mentioned. TikTok. My understanding was that TikTok was Chinese.
It is.
So... So there could be censorship there already. The other one is, you mentioned Alex Jones a lot. Is Alex Jones still broadcasting?
Yes, he is. He's still maintaining a shoestring budget, but he's still staying afloat. But I will give him this credit. I watched how he spent his money when he was doing the money bombs, which is a term that started with helping send Ron Paul campaign money for his presidential campaigns. When he would do 24-hour money bombs and have other guests come on and broadcast for 24 hours donating money, he poured it into his business. And when you look at him, he dresses very casually. I mean, he's got a nice watch, but I mean, it's not a Rolex. But he's had that watch for almost 20 years, and he drives a simple Ford Explorer. So it's not like he's got bling bling. It's not like he's driving high-end cars. It's not like he's got a bunch of hot things going on. If anything, instead of going out and spending money on looking ghetto fabulous by his own admission, he's put more into prepping and things of that nature to make sure his family and his stuff is set, where they've got alternative power sources, storable foods, things of that nature. So he's a prepper by nature. So unlike some of these guys like Glenn Beck and some of these other jackasses, they spend a lot of money on their image and then trying to sell their whatever ventures they got out there that duped the people to keep buying their products. Like Glenn Beck had GB jeans and shit like this. I'm like, what kind of fucking gay shit is that? But Glenn Beck is completely controlled opposition. And when he started falling out of favor, that's when they come out with Ben Shapiro. Of course, he's a Jew, but he tries to sound like he's completely part of the conservative movement. But what he's doing is help warping it. So this isn't much different. He's the modern day William F. Buckley of this generation. And I'm sure there in South Africa, you have similar individuals that probably compromise the pro-Afrikaans movement as well in various factions because of the fact that some of them look shady. Some others just aren't genuine. Or when someone really starts to get inside looking at the books, they start to go, hey, man, this isn't doing what it's supposed to be doing. I mean, we see similar things here, but, you know, kind of lighten us about some of the craziness going on over there.
Okay. Now, the reason I asked about Alex Jones is I thought that he was totally wiped out from the court, from the lawsuits, and that he owes $1 billion and that he's financially ruined.
Not yet. He actually had declared chapter 11 bankruptcy, and then he's got stuff on appeal because in both cases in Connecticut and Texas, they would not allow him to present evidence. They would have him testify, but he wasn't allowed to show any evidence, which means it's cold toe kangaroo court. That being said, I just saw a meme recently that explained the whole Newtown shooting, the very thing he got screwed over for, as shown as a complete false flag operation. Not to mention there was an investigator who is a former federal official himself. He was also a county sheriff and also a school supervisor. He would go investigate things in various school networks and stuff like that. And from the very get-go, when he started investigating, he says everything about this situation is wrong. He says when the shooting first went down, they didn't call 911. They called into a radio station and said there's a live shooting going on. Then when they actually got on the scene and tried to squelch the situation, they would bring in a bunch of porta-potties. And they said there's so many abnormal things going on, and not to mention the evidence shown that 2 weeks before, you were seeing ads for crisis actors in the back pages of Craigslist. And we've seen in almost every shooting and every major incident that happens here that there is a call for crisis actors that are going to be within 50 miles of that location. So it's clearly obvious that they are doing false flags. I mean, the very thing, the Operation Northwoods, that the government tried to get Kennedy to sign on to, where they were going to crash planes into buildings into Miami and blame it on Castro. He's like, fuck that. I'm not signing off on that shit. That was another reason why they killed him, because the fact that he saw they were trying to get total control, and they figured that because Kennedy was a sex addict and all this other shit, which, by the way, that was partially true. A lot of it was because of the drugs they were giving for his – he had Atkinson's disease, as well as he still had issues with his back from the incident with Sam and his crew from PT-109, that's why the shit they were giving him was – the side effects were making him excessively horny. So he's fucking everything that moved. But that being said – he did see what was going on the inside, and to his advantage, he did have Bobby as attorney general. So they were a 1-2 force and was trying to take on the government from the inside. And then when he told Israel, fuck you, I'm not giving you nukes, that signed his death warrant. Plus the fact that the executive order still stands, where he essentially abolished the Federal Reserve by allowing the U.S. Treasury start printing USA notes, which I actually have a $5 USA bill from 1962. And it says United States note, not Federal Reserve note. So there's a lot of things there that Kennedy was targeted for because he was trying to turn it out from the inside. And so he became an enemy of the government. That's why they had one to push us up, one in him for treason. But Jones is trying to appeal all this stuff. And unfortunately, a lot of stuff could take years before anything ever happens to it, because that's why it's called lawfare. If they can keep you tied up and keep you spending all this money, And bankrupt you that way before you ever get justice. I mean, look at General Flynn. They pretty much bankrupted him, and then he finally got is just dues, is now able to finally start collecting his life back, but not before they bankrupted him and also bankrupted his son.
Wow, I didn't know about them bankrupting General Flynn, but the war on the Trump people is interesting. Now, I just wanted to know a bit about Alex Jones, so thanks for explaining that. You mentioned Joe Biden, and I just want to tell you that I often say to people that Joe Biden and the Clintons, they're all white. Those three people are white, but they are a waste of white skin. They are absolute garbage. They are the garbage of our race. They should, in my view, they should all have been ending their lives swinging on the end of a rope. That's my own view, but yeah. They're absolute garbage. But I found...
You know, I actually really wish they would bring Haynes back to this country, because I said, well, Public Haynes really didn't do much. I said, I don't know about that, dude. When you see someone that got caught and he's dangling from a rope, it does make you think twice, especially if you're witnessing it in person, because you're kind of like, damn, that could be me. You know? Now, if you still do it afterwards, that's your dumbass. But at least if you know, you know it's coming to you. I mean, the fact that they're trying to ending, capital punishment in this country is absolutely astonishing to me, because the fact that they'll let the guilty live the rest of their days in a fucking cell, but they want to kill the innocent who have never even breathed a word, much less committed a crime, except the fact of being born white.
Make no mistake that Jews and communists are behind that thing of taking away the death penalty. That's a whole other story. We've also had it taken away here as well. And rest assured, it's done for a reason. It's done for many reasons. They're busy destroying the legal system. The other thing that you mentioned before I get to the Nazi economics, the other thing you mentioned that lots of the Christians on the Republican side, that they turn the other cheek kind of people. I'm glad to hear that you are talking about that and that you don't like that. That is excellent, because I've got to tell you that you are dealing with lower forms of life, and these people that you're dealing with, the people who are the enemy of our race, that are the enemies of our race, these people will eventually, you have to grip them and you have to smash them into the ground. And by the way, regarding capital punishment, and you're talking about public hangings, take, for example, the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire was basically the basis on which all of modern civilization exists. There's correct. Lots and lots of stuff that we do today that comes directly from the Roman Empire. Now look at the Roman Empire. The Romans also had regular events where they could go to the Colosseum and they could watch criminals getting killed. And either the criminals kill each other or they set an animal to kill the criminal. And they regarded it as a sport. So they enjoyed watching the criminals and the scum getting killed. And I must say to you that I have no problem with bringing back some of that. When I look at some of the crimes that exist, those crimes exist. Take, for example, serial killers. Serial killers only exist because we don't... The main reason they exist is because we don't punish them the first time and get rid of them. And lots of these criminals in South Africa, for example, there are many blacks that have been caught, and you don't see it in the newspapers, but if you deal with local suburban people who are dealing with the cops, we used to have groups where you could get together and people from the community can speak to the police like once every 2 months or once a month. Then you discover that when you talk to the cops directly, then you discover, like happened in the suburb I live in, they said, we caught that guy. And when we caught him and we went and checked on the computer systems, we discovered that he's wanted for 170 different crimes. So you know, the fact that also that they let people go and they let them go, then he goes and he goes back to a life of crime. Why? Because he's not going to die. And here in Africa, you know, even if he's in jail, it's not that bad. He's getting fed. He's being looked after. And then when he gets out, then he goes back to a life of crime. And they also learn stuff from each other. The criminals sit and share their secrets in jail. And then they get new ideas, and then they get out. Where,
yes.
You know, yes. All these things happen, and nobody talks about it, you know? The punishment. Yes. Punishment, the way that European people have done it, is right. You know, we have had our forms of punishment. Our forms of punishment are to punish various people for crimes. We throw them in jail. We do this or that to them, and others we go and we execute them. And you know, people in our society, we even used to do things like I think horse thieves at one point in some place were executed. If you stole a horse, then you could be executed. But that's because a horse is an expensive thing, and so forth, you know. But it's Jews and liberals and commies who are taking us away from doing what our culture that's very freaking old, okay, it's been around tens of thousands of years, what our culture knows is the proper way to do things. And so returning to the original question, Nazi economics, I am very interested in Nazi economics. I know about some of those things that people say. I have myself delved into it quite a bit and tried to find books and things on it, because you will struggle. You'll really struggle to understand Nazi economics, the economics of Hitler. And make no mistake, they don't want you to know what Hitler did, because Hitler was solving all the problems, and economics was probably it was just one of his many great things. And many times I sit and ask myself, what was the greatest thing that Hitler did? I tend to think it was economics. But I also want to just add in there, when it comes to economics, is that, yes, Hitler's economics was based on labor. And German friends of mine who've studied their books and their history a lot, they've told me things like, Hitler actually banned supermarket chains. Hitler wanted people to benefit from their own business. So if you got your own little business and you got a shop and you're selling to people, then that's good. He didn't want somebody to come along and wipe out everybody just because they got a bunch of money. So Hitler actually was very pro the small businessman, the common person, the farmer. Farmers were other ones that Hitler Hitler even had it such that farmers couldn't sell their land, that a farmer must hand over his farm to his son. So he really saw farmers as special, and he wanted to maintain them. But there's lots that Hitler did, and I must tell you that I am convinced they don't want us to think about socialism and that kind of stuff, because that's what will stuff it up for the Jews. And the other thing about Jews is I put out a video in this last month about the British atrocities against the Boers. And I don't know if you know this, but basically what it boiled down to was the Rothschilds, probably the Rothschilds in Britain, saw that the Boer republics had lots of gold and diamonds. And the Boer republics, the two Boer republics, were estimated to have a quarter of the gold in the world at the time. And the next thing you know, once the gold and diamonds were being discovered, next thing you know is Britain is invading, and they're bringing in white men from all across the empire, from Canada, from New Zealand, from Australia, to come and kill Boers. And the Boers would have survived. The Boers were fighting the British army even in guerrilla war. They were still doing very well. even once the British had conquered everything, the Boers still didn't give up and they were fighting a guerrilla war. And that is when the British started doing these concentration camps and things, and the women and children started dying. So in that video, I put in a lot of Jew-related stuff that's not even known in South Africa, including the proofs that the Rothschilds were... Because the Rothschilds sent a Christmas hamper to every single soldier in South Africa. They sent it privately at their own expense, and it came from the Rothschilds. And I've got one of those, a photo of one of those cards that the Rothschilds sent. So the Rothschilds were over the moon with Britain smashing the Boers. Because guess who's going to be raking in the money? And then there's also another guy. I looked into a guy called Lord Milner, the guy who started the concentration camps. And Milner, There are some people who think that Milner might have been a Jew. If he was a Jew, then he was a crypto Jew. But the other possibility that is definitely so is that he was very pro-Jew. And I came across translations and things where you could see the things that Lord Milner said about Jews. He loved Jews. He said, "My best friends are Jews. Jews are the finest people I've ever known," and blah, blah, blah. And Milner was actually the guy behind the concentration camps, the murder of the women and children. But Nazi economics, definitely, that's a big topic. And it's a topic where there's a lot of stuff hidden. And you can never really find anything that deals with it properly. I've got small books and little things here and there where you can see the different ideas they had. But the full thinking of Nazi economics and what Hitler was doing, it's very much an unknown kind of a topic. My own thinking is that, you see, Hitler's economy was also sort of partly capitalist, because it wasn't like having communism. He had businesses. There were big businesses that were running, but Hitler put rules. He forced the rich to work in certain ways as well, and his system worked. Another thing that Hitler basically got rid of was he got rid of stock market speculation. And those things are good. I mean, I look at it these days, and everyone can go and speculate. And it's there are things that people are doing that are a waste of time. That if every man in the country, if every man and woman in the country sat and only speculated on the stock market, that is not productive work. And the Nazis had a state saying that people need to engage in proper productive work. Not all this weird, creepy, scamming and that kind of thing. You must do proper work that has proper value. There were people who worked, proper economists, etc. There were proper economists who worked with Hitler. But, if you look at Hitler, he was trying to make things work properly and honestly, and he didn't want Jewish type of... Because basically, if you look at a place like America and South Africa and most of the West, you'll see that what you get is you get the super rich. And the super rich come and they own almost everything. And then the Jews come and they steal the cake. And then the common man just gets the crumbs, okay? Hitler was trying to solve that. That's what he was really doing.
Now, that happened a lot, William Luther Pierce had done several comparisons about the difference between Nazism and fascism, because obviously they're always purposely confused to be the same, and they're not. There's very big differences between fascism and National Socialism. They have a lot of similar ways to do things, and they have some similar outcomes, but they're two totally different forms of government and economic systems. So, I mean, he brought up a lot of different stuff. For example, fascism, you're going to have a little bit more of big businesses wanting to collude with the government so they get favorable preference. For example, here in the United States, a form of fascism would have been the big three automakers. So you have GM, Ford, and Chrysler as the big three American companies, and they would pick, they have like a quasi triumvirate in collusion with the government to force out other competitors such as the Japanese, the Italian cars, the German car market, and others. I mean, even the Yugo, when the Yugo was here in the 90s and stuff from Yugoslavia. So, I mean, you'd have a lot of pull on there. And plus the fact that a lot of these shops are all union-run shops. They always throw money at the Democrat and everything else. I mean, I've seen it firsthand. I am very anti-union because there was a need for unions years ago when Jimmy Hoffa was pushing the Teamsters for better working conditions, better working hours, child labor laws, et cetera, yada, yada, yada. It started off as a good, noble thing, but then he got greedy and started turning into almost a mafioso type of situation. And then twice he got deposed and then and came back into power. And then finally, they finally disappeared his ass. But he was consistent about always making sure that he took the reins of power whenever possible. And we see that also with J. Edgar Hoover, you know, starting with eventually becomes the FBI, which is a quasi-government organization. It's not fully part of the government. That same with NASA. NASA is not part of the federal government. It has a private part, public partnership going on there. So I mean, there's a lot of stuff there. People think that's really part of the American government, and it really isn't. So that in a way is a form of fascism in itself. But you look at a lot of the big names even after the war that we still recognize today: Mercedes-Benz, Farber, some of the big names of German companies that we take for granted these days that survived after the war, not only the bombings and the stuff of their infrastructure, but not getting purged by the Allied takeover. Say, oh, well, you supplied this and you supplied that to the Nazi regime. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, yeah? Well, how about what you guys supplied to them? You know, Ford actually put a lot of their engines in many of the NS troop trucks. You know, AT&T provided a lot of the phone lines for the Nazi hierarchy. Harriman provided a lot of the railroad tracks that actually end up supposedly going to the concentration camps. So, I mean, you can't sit there and say that the companies in Germany are all in cahoots with the Nazi party, that a lot of American companies and captains of industry helped promote that because they saw when Hitler was jump-starting the economy that was a great investment. Same with right when the Soviet Union fell, within a couple of years after the Russian Federation came into place, you saw a lot of American companies seeing that as a wide open market to jump into and tap as a resource, especially all the oil there in Siberia, because it's not rich, sweet crude. It's the more dirty stuff, but I mean, there's so much there. And so it's like, oh, well, we can start investing in Russia, do all this stuff. So I think with Putin doing what he's doing, and they try to put sanctions on him. He's like, you know, we don't need your fucking ass. Get the fuck out. Some McDonald's, get the hell out of here. By the way, give us the keys to your buildings because you're not going to be needing them. We're going to go ahead and repurpose them for something else. You know, I got a friend over in Russia. She talks about how the economy in Russia has actually done much better since we got the sanctions in place and got a lot of this Western influence out, because it's forced Russians to think about Russian businesses. I mean, now that, but they're totally against the gay marriage thing. Putin has now abolished transgender people from being able to adopt children. They've even sanctioned a pro-nuclear family flag within the last 10, 15 years, which shows a mother, father, son, and daughter. I mean, and they give them tax incentives to have children. We saw that in National Socialist Germany, that they were giving them tax incentives to have children. They would give them very cheap loans to get housing. And the more children you have, instead of burdening your debt like they do here, they actually gave you tax cuts. And if you have more children, that's less of your house you have to pay. So if you have four children, a house is basically for free. So unlike here, you see a lot of brainwashing, especially against whites. Like someone will go up and say, hey, man, how many kids you got? Well, I got one or two kids. You know, okay, no big deal. They expect that, right? But then you go, oh, I've got four, or I've got five, or I got six. Oh, man, you need to cut that fucker off, dude. Why you got there having these kids? Oh, but niggers can go out and have 5, 6, 7, 8 kids from just as many different women, and it's not frowned upon. In their own community, it's seen as a status symbol. You know, Muslims can go and marry 7 different wives and have probably just as many children per wife. So when you see the invasion of our West, we're under Judeo-Christian fucking values, we can't compete mathematically. You know, you can't have multiple wives or even have, you know, it's even our celebrities, it's frowned upon for these celebrities to go out and have side affairs and shit and have unclaimed children. I mean, I'm constantly reading about some of these Hollywood celebrities, even in their day of golden age of Hollywood, how they would have multiple marriages or while they were married to one chick, they go out and bang 3 or 4 with, what's his name, a singer, a guy from the 60s Elvis? And 70s that did, no, the guy from Britain, she's a lady, Tom, oh God, what the fuck's his name, he's got that big powerful voice, oh fuck.
I can't think of the name at the moment.
He did that theme song from a James Bond movie, Thunderball. Oh God, Tom, fuck, guy's name. He's still alive. He's like in his 80s now.
It might come to you just now. It normally does.
Hang on. Let me grab my Thunderball and see if it says the song on it. Hold on. I got the DVD right here. Big hits in the 60s and 70s. And he actually had a comeback back in the 90s. He did an interesting album. The Lead and How to Swing or something like that. So and it introduced a lot of different other types of styles like industrial and stuff into his mix. Oh God, I forgot his damn name. Tom Jones. He's got that big, powerful voice. So,
I got bad news for you about Tom Jones.
Oh, I know. That guy's been around the block.
No,
but you know, he's still married.
I think he's Jewish. I think Tom Jones is Jewish. Let me check.
Yeah, because I looked it up not too long ago. I didn't see anything about that, but it wouldn't surprise me. Especially with a generic name such as that.
I think that I came across something that he was Jewish. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm just quickly having a look.
Sometimes you can tell by their hair, man. I mean, their hair just looks coarse. You know what I mean? I mean, if you can't tell by the nose or the eyes and of course.
I don't see anything that he's Jewish. Maybe I'm mixing him up with another guy, so forget that.
he's just one of those guys that, you know, that knows he had a product and he was able to enjoy women and you know, and a lot of people, and here's the funniest thing, man, that I've noticed this too. Rock and roll by itself is a very liberal medium. And we know that the Jews were pushing it because a lot of the studios are all run by Jews as well as the record labels, okay? Even Elvis himself is part Jewish. And you can see it sometimes you look at certain angles. But that being said, the whole thing of rock and roll is be able to speak your mind and expression yourself and this, that, and the other, and to talk about things that are taboo. Even songs that Elvis tackled in the 50s, like Don't and some other stuff, you know, One Night with You or whatever, it's supposed to be One Night in Sin. Many of the songs that were just like, whoa, man, you can't be talking about that shit. But then you see artists years later like Madonna would always make sure they would always have challenging topics such as that, because that's what gave them some appeal. But now at the same stroke, what I'm seeing is there's a story I just covered on my show recently. There's a band called Ghost, and I've heard 1 or 2 songs. I'm not a big fan of them. But anyways, they're currently touring with a Viking themed band that's been around for 30 years called Amon Amarth. And obviously, musically they're heavy. The vocalist is literally like a one trick pony, dude. He's got like one tone and that's it. But the songs are always about Vikings and warriors and stuff like that and conquest, okay? So they've been around a long time. It's like also people just realize they're there and they're like, holy shit, so now they got a whole new generation of fans. But they're touring together, and they played a casino in Maryland. And then I saw another venue was also a casino. It was also having the same issue. They were telling the fans that they are not to come to the concert in masks or makeup. They would be told to take it off. Now, when you come into a very theatrical band such as them or King Diamond, whether he's with Merciful Fate or solo, or Kiss, obviously, for example, or even like the Blue Man Group, who no one still knows who they are, or even Gwar, they wear these monster costumes, or some of the newer bands like Slipknot, you know, they wear like rubber face masks, okay, that these fans can't express who their favorite member is, or really get into the subculture of that band, because now you're saying, oh, I can't, you can't be coming in here dressed like that. It's like, hold on, what the fuck? Are you fucking kidding me? And where are the bands standing up for this? And the reason why I'm saying that is because you've got Rage Against the Machine, which is a very hardcore left-wing political band. And Tom Morello has actually not only chastised but canceled gigs of venues where they want to use facial recognition cameras on their fans. And I'm like, what the fuck? I may disagree with some of Morello's points of view, or at least we could probably debate about some of them. Like, why do you come from this angle? And let's talk about it, okay? But that being said, I respect the fact he is a political activist as a musician. But that being said, he's willing to take a stand for his fans. Now, here's the thing I brought up. Let's say a lot of people are into this stuff. They're into angry music because they're in college. You know, they're into this alternative sound and shit. How many people go and watch a Rage Against the Machine concert, hanging out with their frat buddies? You know, hey, man, yo, cool. I'm all fucked up. Checking out Ray TM. Woo! And then 30, 40 years later, they decide to run for office. And we saw, like, what happened with sports figures here. We've got people that are so obsessed, and a primary example is the Cincinnati Bengals. These fans are so obsessed with their quarterbacks that they will follow this guy's career and expect to take the numbers. Okay, from the day he picked up a football and threw it to his dad, they want to know his throwing record in high school, his throwing record in college, and add that to his totals. I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. You can't do that shit. When you're in professional sports, that's when you start counting the numbers, you know? But these guys are so obsessed with these sports figures. They think they're gods. And then the worst part of it is that we saw with Judge Kavanaugh being confirmed as a justice on the Supreme Court, how they try to go back into his teenage years and say that he's a serial rapist and all this other shit. Like, if they're trying to find an angle on this guy, they want to prove everything that this is part of his character, that he's all about taking advantage of women, doing all this shit. Yet he's got his own wife to verify, dude, he was a virgin when we met in college, and we didn't even do it until like 2 weeks before we got married, you know? And not only that, but here's the most poignant part of that particular situation. He produced calendars that he had saved for decades of everything he did and all his events and meetings and shit, and even times. And the senator was so appalled by this. He's like, what the hell? What would make you do such a thing? He said, my father told me to do this, and I always did what my father told me to do. Now, on the surface, Jan, that is someone you want as a judge, which means the guy is disciplined and that he keeps notations. In other words, this is a guy you want to have consideration for Chief Justice, not this Sonia Sotomayor, who we call Sodomy Moore, because she will fuck you up the ass, where she's just a political activist on a bench. You know, but this is a guy that is that detailed. That's someone you want as a Supreme Court justice. But again, look how they're using anything you did in the past now. I mean, how many politicians we saw in the 90s and on up that did shit that were radicalized in the 60s and 70s because that's what they were lumped into. That's what they're brainwashed into. Like Bill Clinton. I smoked, but I didn't inhale. You know. But you see a lot of these guys that become conservative commentators decades later because they realize, you know, being a Marxist doesn't make money. You want to make money and have a livelihood, you might want to be a political commentator on the right side, like David Horowitz, for example. Okay, he used to be a Marxist and writing for the paper at Berkeley as a Marxist. But now he realizes that being a Marxist doesn't pay the bills. Let's be honest. Being a conservative commentator does. And so, and not only that, but he has a unique perspective of being able to comment on the left because he's been there. He knows their modus operandi. He knows their inner workings and how they work. So if he's a little bit of a quasi-whistleblower, that gives him more credibility. But you don't see them going back and say, hey, man, you were a communist back in college. What the fuck? How can anyone ever see as a reputable conservative? You know? No, they don't chastise that guy because he's actually an operative. So I'm sure you see a lot of shit in South Africa because – how many whites you were talking about here when you were saying, like, you know, the Clintons and Joe Biden are disgraced to our race. How many whites are disgraced to their race in South Africa who would have supported Winnie Mandela and her flaming tire necklaces and shit on dissidents. I mean, you know, I hear a lot of you guys really talk about Bantu Stephen Biko as being a piece of shit, whereas Peter Gabriel tries to turn him into a martyr. And because of Gabriel's song is one of the reasons why apartheid was abolished, because you had Western artists, even though he was born in Africa, Western artists are basically saying, you know, attacking apartheid like it was the most evil fucking thing on earth. But yet you never see them attacking the Soviet system. You never see them attacking what the communists did in China or what Pol Pot did. Oh, no, let's attack apartheid because it can be easily targeted and can be taken down because it's run by whites, not Jews.
Yeah, that's the real secret to it, is that apartheid was a white idea, whereas all this communism is a Jewish idea. So the Jews, yes, see to it that everyone focuses on apartheid, and they hammer apartheid. The whole anti-apartheid movement is very interesting, and I'm actually lately been digging deeper into our history because I want to do certain videos. And I'm even digging into deeper history from before I was born, even for Rhodesia, and picking up very interesting things. And regarding South Africa and apartheid, it becomes evident that apartheid was really a thing that was created by the Afrikaners, the Boers. When Afrikaans people finally managed to get power, it was the common man, and this is what they wanted. They didn't want to live with blacks. They didn't want to be globalist. They wanted to do their own thing. But one notices that, and also the political party that started apartheid, the National Party, there were people who were in the National Party that had German influences. Some of them had studied in Germany, and they had dealt with the Germans in the time of Hitler. So, you know,
I've actually heard a lot of commentators mention that apartheid was actually another form of National Socialism.
Now you're talking, because there's a lot of stuff in apartheid that has got all kinds of offshoots that relate to National Socialism. For example, you could say that apartheid was also Afrikaans socialism, because the majority of the people in government, police, army, everything were actually white Afrikaans people. And and for, you know, when they had to hand over power, it was a huge disaster for a huge portion of the Afrikaans-speaking population, that in an instant their entire livelihood is wiped out. And but yes, and there's even there were lots of Jewish communists in South Africa. Jews were pushing communism all the time, but one particularly important early Jew was a guy called Bunting, and Bunting actually wrote a book called The Rise of the South African Reich. He was using that German term. The book is called The Rise of the South African Reich. The Jews from the outset, the Jews saw apartheid as a kind of national socialism. They knew this is racialism, and they immediately were working with the blacks. The Jews ran around like crazy, grabbing the blacks, the Indians, the coloreds, and immediately trying to gather them together against the whites. That happened early on when apartheid came. The Jews were on the top of their game. They always resisted apartheid. They hated it, even though there was nothing in apartheid that was openly anti-Jewish. But there were people in the senior people in the apartheid movement, like Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd. Verwoerd was probably a closet Nazi, and Verwoerd is the guy who was later murdered. And Verwoerd actually was
probably, that the prime minister that was murdered in the parliament?
Yes, yes.
I've heard a lot about that, and I mean, I guess it was a big fucking deal, dude.
Well, you must understand, here in Africa, whites don't assassinate each other. It's not the done thing. We don't, whites in Southern Africa, we don't go and assassinate each other. We can have our differences, we can argue, we can differ totally, but we don't kill each other. And I dug a lot into the whole story of the assassination of Favort, because Favort is the only white guy who was ever assassinated in South Africa. And he's also not only the only white guy who was assassinated, but he was the Prime Minister of South Africa. And they actually tried to assassinate him twice. I don't know if you know that. First time he was shot in the face, and he managed to survive that. And the second time he was stabbed. And I did a lot of digging. There was actually an Englishman. I did a whole video about this. There was an Englishman in South Africa who wrote his memoirs in the early 1990s. He was a neurologist. And this neurologist lived here in Johannesburg, not that far from where my suburb is. And this neurologist wrote his memoirs, and he wrote some interesting things in his memoirs. And he devoted two chapters in his memoirs to the assassination of Favort. And it's because this English neurologist makes the case in his own book, in his own memoirs, he makes the case that his partner, who was Jewish, his partner was a Jewish psychiatrist named Solly Jacobson. And he came, and his partner was a communist, a Jew communist. And his partner was constantly trying to interest him in communism. And his Jewish partner also behaved very strangely every time something happened to Favort. And and this guy then started like watching. And after a time, this Jewish communist, his partner, says that he's got to get out of the country. And this Englishman knows them personally. He knows their wives and their families, and he interacts with them, and they've known each other for years. And this Englishman begins to think that, you know what, this partner is somehow involved in the assassination attempts on the Prime Minister. And anyway, the bottom line is that he makes the case that both of the assassinations are linked to that Jew who was his partner. And I've discovered even more things since then, including the fact that the guy who shot Favort in the face the first time was a Jew. He was actually a Jew. And was he a Jew? Hold on. I'm wrong. He wasn't a Jew. He was an Englishman who was well known in the Jewish community. Correction. He was an Englishman, but he was very well known in the Jewish community. And I know of Jews who spoke about him and how much they knew about him, because he was a farmer or a businessman. He had a chocolate factory, I think, as well. But at the end of the day, you discover all sorts of things. And that Jew that fled, that psychiatrist, do you know that the blacks who rule South Africa, they've got an organization called MK. MK is Mkhonto we Sizwe. MK is the black, let's call it the black army that was created by Nelson Mandela. Now, do you know that the South African government, the black government, actually names that Jew, Solly Jacobson, names him as one of the founders of Umkhonto we Sizwe. And that is the psychiatrist who disappears. He's never caught, he's never put in jail, and they regard him as one of the founders of that thing. And I did videos about Nelson Mandela and all of Nelson Mandela's links to Jews. Nelson Mandela's got lots of links to Jews. And any prominent violent black who's really big time, like Malema as well, They are all linked to Jews. Mandela.
Yeah, well, Malema's not even South African. Isn't he like from Zimbabwe or something?
No, no. My understanding is that he is from South Africa, but he's from a small tribe. He's a Pedi.
Okay.
He's a Pedi. And it's like one of the tribes in the northern part of the country. So he's not from a big tribe.
He's petty, all right. I mean, I saw him trying to bullshit and saying that the courts proved that he could play his song to kill the Boer and all that shit. That's why I sent you that meme, because it's like they want to attack Jason Aldean for saying, you know, try that small town. We had this guy go up there and just advocate an outright fucking murder of a whole other race.
He's done it for ages. He's been he was doing it even on national television and radio like 10 and more years ago. He was he would be broadcast across all the mass media, and not one person, not one liberal, and also not a single government minister has ever criticized what he said. And he would openly go on TV and everything, and he'd openly call for the killing of all the whites. And nobody would say a word. Nobody would say a word. They all sit there quietly, and they let him say it. Because the black government and the blacks in the ruling party, they want him to say that. You know, so it's not like they don't know. It's that they are in support of him. That's why you'll never hear any black politician or president or ever criticizing Julius Malema, regardless of what he does, regardless of the violence he's involved in, and he's involved in a lot of stuff. That guy, that black guy, has tried by himself to start a race war in South Africa multiple times. I've watched him closely for the last 15 years, man.
Yeah, I mean, that usually have guys like that pull that shit here, they wind up dead, especially in the 60s. But I mean, that's the thing is nowadays, you don't see civil rights leaders like we had back then. I mean, and again, we had a very interesting number of them here, especially in the 60s and early 70s. More and more I dive into George Lincoln Rockwell, I actually really appreciate him and his position, because he's very articulate in explaining some of his stuff that he realized at the time, and the short body of work that's recorded of him, as well as his books. But at the same stroke, everybody always, you know, promotes Martin Luther King and all this other shit, blah, blah. But you know what? I have to give more credit to Malcolm X, because, and I will say this, besides the book that he had dictated to Alex Haley, Spike Lee is an outright black nationalist and racist, did an excellent film with Denzel Washington and really captured a lot of the character of Malcolm X, which is used as a good primer. But you could go look up a lot of the interviews he did back in the 60s before he was assassinated. And this guy was a two-bit thief, you know, and he basically got re-educated in the prison system, because the guy said, look, I'm going to give you two books here. I'm going to give you the Quran and Webster's Dictionary. He says, know them both. And then you look at how he would do debates on national television with some of these commentators. And not only was he very articulate and very precise in a lot of his thing, but he didn't try to sugarcoat any of the shit. On these trips, it's like, you know, you got differences. So you got house niggers and you got field niggers. You know, they're trained for specific duties. You don't put a field nigger in the house. They don't know what to do. It's totally out of their element. And says a lot of us are the same ways. We're trained to be house niggers or field niggers. But when you actually try to switch them around for whatever reason, it doesn't work, because it's like white collar, blue collar guys. They're totally different backgrounds. So, I mean, and he had the balls to say this shit. And then, of course, he's assassinated by his own people because he realized Elijah Muhammad was a fraud. And then when he's getting ready to go out and start his own religious group and shit, they knew he was a major threat. He had a lot of potential to destroy the Nation of Islam. And then so they had to assassinate him before he on his inductory day of getting ready to announce it. So, again, you also look at the body of work. I saw Dinesh D'Souza had done a comparison. It's like, well, if you're going to sit there and say that you got all these black philosophers and all these other leaders and blah, 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 blah. Okay, let's put the proof in the pudding. If I was on my list, Martin Luther King would not be at the top of the list. It'd be at the bottom. As a matter of fact, I would give W.E. Du Bois probably a lot more credit than I would Martin Luther King for several reasons. He had written several books explaining himself. Hell, even Frederick Douglass did more than Martin Luther King did. What did Martin Luther King did? Oh, he's got the letter from the Birmingham jail, National Alliance has exposed many times over the years through the FBI files and stuff that have been kept on Martin Luther King, that not only was he not this new myth that he's some Republican, that he was actually funded by the communists, and he was also a rapist. He actually had been either involved with, in presence of, or even actually accosted several white women himself during his quote-unquote ministry. And don't know if his wife knew about it or not, but the bottom line is, he's not the saint that they claim him to be. He's just as much a monkey as everybody else. He's given an opportunity, he takes full advantage. It's like any other rock star. What was the whole purpose of being a rock star these days? Just won the appeal. Dude, you get all these girls thrown at you. When you become a position of influence, strength, and power, women throw themselves at you, When they attack Donald Trump because it says, grab him by the pussy and shit. You say, oh, it's so fucking sexist, this, that, and the other. Dude, it's locker room talk, man, between men. Because a lot of these chicks are attracted to men with power and influence. You could be a guy that makes a name for himself like Donald Trump and be a real estate mogul, or you could be a fucking rock star. Women sit there and see her performing and shit, whether you're just a great songwriter or a singer like fucking Steve Perry or Journey, or you're known for your sexual prowess in bed like Ted Nugent was back in the day, or Jim Morrison is like, oh yeah, what's this guy like in the sack? What the fuck? People love that fucking platform that they've been put on, and they sometimes want to prove it to themselves, like, oh yeah, this guy's let me see how good he really is, And then some rock stars really take advantage of it. Some of them treat them nasty. Others treat them with respect. I've heard various rock stars, they give the rock star treatment to the groupies because they want to make sure they uphold that image. That, dude, this guy isn't a dick. He's not an asshole person. Dude, he actually treated me with some class. Yeah, we did our thing and all, but dude, he made sure I had a limo ride back to my house. All sorts of other shit. He wanted to show that he was a rock star. And so, but nowadays, they want to attack people like that because of the fact that they, first of all, they got to control them. If you can't do this, you can't do that. People laugh when David Lee Roth and Van Halen, of course, he's a Jew. One of the things he did, he took out paternity insurance. This guy was already a visionary and knew what could possibly happen to his career if he got a little too wild, He took out paternity insurance. I don't hear any rock stars doing shit like that, So, I mean, he was a good front man, he was an attractive dude, I think he's a shitty singer, but the bottom line is he got all the women. So he made sure to cover his ass. He covered his base because he wouldn't have his money taken away. Where someone like Clint Black or even Ice-T got fucked by a groupie because he's come back. Oh, by the way, when you fucked me that time in Memphis, guess what? Oh, yeah. Clint Beck lost his marriage over that, and his career never rebounded. Ice-T, that's why he stayed on Law & Order for all those years and shit, because he was paying like $50,000 a month in child support payments for one fucking kid, So, I mean, a lot of these rock stars aren't smart and maybe taking out paternity insurance to protect themselves, because there's a lot of groupies out there that will purposely go out there and make sure to get a rock star to fuck them so they can fleece them. So that's the problem these days, is that the whole rock star thing is now being destroyed, because if you want to use this as a platform to get ideas out, unless it's ideas they approve of, you will have your shit canceled, So, I mean, that's the problem. But that's what America does. We create people, and then we do it just to tear them down. Because I know other people have talked to in South Africa go, I understand why you guys worship celebrities like you do. Movie stars and rock stars. I don't get that. And they see through the bullshit, But the same stroke the media uses as an advantage. Justin Bieber, he's from Canada. I don't give a fuck about some Canuck who can't, I couldn't even tell you one of his songs. But, dude, he comes down here in Miami. Oh, Justin Bieber got a DUI because he crashed his car into some shit. Well, we're going to have full coverage on his arraigning for the next, 96 hours and shit. So while they're focusing on some stupid guy like Justin Bieber, that's when the government's most dangerous. Because now they go out and pull a bunch of shit behind your back while you're worried about what Justin Bieber's going to be arraigning in court.
Well, the way I see some of these things, and it is interesting that you mentioned about the American obsession with sports and rock stars and other things. All these other people are created through business media, through Jew media. Jew media is to making people famous. People aren't becoming famous just by themselves. They're being promoted constantly. And notice who the Jews promote and notice who they don't promote. And,
yes.
You know, then you start saying, like I looked at, you know, once I woke up to the Jewish issue, I began to start looking at every actor and everyone famous that I'd ever, you know, being aware of, you know. So if I see a movie or I listen to a song, then I say to myself, could this person be Jewish? Let me go and check. And I was horrified at how many famous rock stars were Jews. And now that I want to think of the names, now I can't even think of them. And the same goes even for like comedians and actors and then you go and you dig into their past and then you see, oh my goodness, these are Jews. And so then, you know, you look at this and you say, well, look at how these Jews have been moving into all these places. Like one of the most famous comedians from Denmark, for example. Let me just go and look it up.
I mean, while you're mentioning that, too, at the same time, I just found a recent Roseanne Barr was Jewish. I had no idea.
Yes, there you go. And there are many others. I'm just trying to, just bear with me, Victor Borge, who's a famous Danish comedian. You go and you look into his past, and Victor Borge is actually Jewish. His original name was Borge Rosenbaum.
Borge Rosen.
And there are lots in America. There's all kinds of weird ones that I was thinking of that are Jews.
Hey, I come across a lot of actors that I grew up with. I went and looked them up afterwards and did not know they were Jewish. And I was shocked. And of course, either they totally changed their name altogether, or it's just a shortened derivative of their actual name. So I've learned if you see someone with obviously a short name like Barr with two R's, that it could be Berenstein or something. So, I mean, and again, was something I found out a while back. You know, it's interesting where some of these racial epithets come from? You know, where does the term kike come from? Well, I heard it came from actually through Ellis Island here, because of the fact that the Jews that would come over here that weren't educated and couldn't write, they said, okay, well, make your mark. Well, most people put an X on the dotted line, right? They don't do an X or a cross because of the fact they see it as a form of Christianity, so they do a circle. And a circle in Yiddish is keikel. And so that's where kike comes from. So I was like, oh, that's fucking interesting. Because I remember the first time I heard the term kike, I was actually watching a Patrick Swayze movie in 1990 called Next of Kin. And the guy was talking, this mobster or whatever, because they killed his cousin or some shit. And, of course, he's a cop or whatever. But his cousin was killed in the back of this semi-trailer. He's like, you know, I've dealt with all sorts of groups. I've done with fucking spics and wops and kikes and all this shit. But you hillbillies are some of the dumbest motherfuckers I've ever encountered and shit. And he's like, and then his henchman goes, oh yeah. He's like, you guys are so stupid. Plow rocks for a living. And the gangster stopped them and goes, hey, watch it. That used to be us. So give them some respect. Because of the fact that a lot of the Italian mafia and shit come from some sort of, you know, agriculture background or just doing whatever it took to get by, you know? So when you sit there and make fun of these farmers for plowing rocks, many of those people were farmers coming up. Even in Roman times, you know, when soldiers, one of the benefits of fighting in the legion was that when they would get new territories, they're promised land. And what do? They turn their sword into plows, because they know that if you can plow land and live off the land and shit, you can make some money. So there's a long history there. But I was interested. That was the first time I really heard the term kike. You know, really at all, especially in a movie, because I'm like, what the fuck is a kike? You know, I'm not used to that term. And so especially a lot of these kids nowadays, they don't hear a lot of these terms and they don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I mean, they think it's absolutely horrendous that you would call someone a nigger, especially in the human. It's like, oh, man, you didn't say that right. It's like, what do you mean? Am I saying it right? Oh, man, he's your nigger. No, that ain't my nigger. That's a nigger. That's an E-R, motherfucker. That ain't no A. That's an E-R. I ain't from New York. That is a nigger. And then they're like appalled. Like, why would you say somebody? Because you call it what it is. And then, of course, all the other derivatives. You got spades. You got fucking jigaboos. You got moon crickets. I mean, it's amazing the terms that Southerners have for blacks. A moon cricket? What the fuck is a moon cricket? Yeah. I mean, I hear some of the most interesting epitaphs, and then sometimes I'll go research the history and go, where did this term come from? Because obviously there's a history to it. And sometimes a lot of these terms become their own terms and not necessarily a direct relation to where it was derived from. I mean, I'm sure you guys have. I mean, you know, the first time I heard the term kefir was actually in the Lethal Weapon 2 film, you know. When they're looking at Danny Glover's thing, it's like, oh, look at this guy. Oh, he's a kefir. Well, I'm saying, what the fuck's a kefir? You know, and then, of course, you guys don't even like to say it down here. And that's what they're trying to do up here, you know. I mean, you get some religious leaders trying to tell rappers, you should be saying that word, blah, blah, blah. Fuck you, nigger. I'll say anything I fucking want. So, I mean, you know, I think it's funny shit. But, you know, again, I every now and then I see these little articles that pop up. I go, oh. These are terms that boomers use that shouldn't be used anymore, or these are slang terms that need to be fucking jettisoned. And a lot of the slang terms that they use are from a lot of 70s blaxploitation films. Yes. And and things like that. So they go and they attack these usages. And I'm going, okay, where's Black Lives Matter on this? Why aren't they going, hey, wait a minute, that's our vocabulary, homie. Why the fuck you want to take the words from us? And so, but they want to take our words so we can't say stuff because it means something, but yet they want to propagate their words because it means something to them. I know you see that a lot down there in South Africa.
Yeah, in South Africa, they will put you, they want to stop you using some of those words like the K word. You have to be careful what you say. It's a minefield. It's a minefield of stuff. Hate speech has become a real minefield. You can hardly say anything about anything. I did a bunch of videos about some of that stuff because the hate speech laws are nasty.
And but they can attack you. See how it works? You can't call them by a name, but they can call you everything but a white man. They can call you a snowman, a cracker, all this shit. And no one says anything to the contrary. How is that not hate speech?
Yeah, well, the thing that you got to understand is that in South Africa, that ultimately, you know, you Americans, and I think you Americans will start appreciating some things now, like with them going after Trump, because you're starting to see that you're losing control of your society. But let me explain in Africa. That you can have words on a piece of paper, the same words on a piece of paper here in Africa that you have on a piece of paper in America. You can have your constitution and we can have our constitution, and our constitution looks like your constitution. But when it comes to court and stuff like that, you then find that that between the Jews and the commies, that they start changing those meanings and redefining things. And that
well, they no longer become principles; they become guidelines.
The court starts interpreting the laws. There's a whole if you dig into legal stuff since that time when I went to court and all that, I must tell you, I've learned a lot about legal stuff. Ultimately, those words can be interpreted by the magistrate and the judge, and there is a context that can be used. And all of those things are slowly put into the system, and the whites don't realize it. And the next thing you know is you can't say this and you can't say that. But on paper, it looks like it's reasonable, but the implementation is unreasonable. But you don't have any say over that. They slip all kinds of things into different laws, and ultimately then it comes out and bites you. And you lose control of your society. Something that you Americans don't grasp is take, for example, something like the American, which is probably best explained in this way. You Americans, you've got your Constitution, okay? The American Constitution. And you people are happy that the American Constitution is a good document, it's a sound document, and that when you live, when you run your country and you live your life using that document, that all will be good. But go and take a look at the blacks who left America and who went to Liberia. So you had black Americans who'd lived in America, understood America. They went to their own country in Africa and they took the American Constitution with them. So how did it work out for them? And you see that it turned into a shit show, to be honest.
Yeah.
A total mess, a total rampant mess that is no better and in many cases worse than other black countries. Yet those blacks are using the same words and the same concepts, and they even lived in your society and understood your society. And yet look what happens when they implement it. And that is something that Americans, conservatives, don't grasp. You think that, yeah, it doesn't matter if the whites become a minority. It doesn't matter because we'll still have these laws and we'll still have the Supreme Court and we'll have all these things in place and everything will work the same. You don't understand the nightmare that comes when you are no longer the majority. Then you'll see how things can change completely. And there are whites in South Africa that I've heard from where people said, you know, we cannot believe that this is what this country came to. My dentist is a Boer. And I gave him a copy of my book back in 2001 when I published it. And in recent years, when I go and I visit him, my dentist says to me, you know, Jan, when you gave me that book, I couldn't believe that South Africa would become like Zimbabwe. And now I see it. Now it is here. I didn't believe it was possible. And the truth of the matter is that all societies can be destroyed, including you people in America. Just because you haven't had a war for 100 years, just because you haven't been shooting each other for 100 years and more, doesn't mean it can't happen. It can happen.
And it won't be states against states. It'll be neighbor against neighbor.
Yes, it'll be a different kind of war this time. But, you know, when I look at, take for example, another thing that's come up is the issue it's not just radicalization, but it's polarization. And there are many Americans that have complained, oh, the country is becoming so polarized. The other day, I was taking a look in the book Rules for Radicals. Rules for Radicals, written by the Jew Saul Alinsky. Inside Rules for Radicals, it tells the radicals that they must push for polarization. So there it is. It's written. A Jew wrote it, I don't know how long ago, 20 or 30 years ago. And there it is. And they are following those rules. And that is what is making your country go crazier and crazier. That book Rules for Radicals is a dangerous book. That was Obama's book. Obama had
He wrote that back in the '60s. Because, matter of fact, Hillary Clinton had met him and basically told him that she was his disciple, and you could clearly see it in many of her tactics. And not to mention, he also dedicated a book to the first rebel, which was Lucifer.
Okay. I forgot. One of the singers that is Jewish is Billy Joel. Billy Joel is one of the ones that I... And there's another guy who did a lot of romantic songs, lots of romantic songs in America. And he also turned out to be a Jew.
And you're talking about Barry Manilow?
Yes, Barry Manilow.
Yes, he's Jewish. So is Bette Midler. She's Jewish as well.
Tons of them. They just crawl out of the freaking woodwork. But yeah, old George Lincoln Rockwell, he saw all of this coming big time. Nobody was onto the Jews like Rockwell.
He actually said that his awakening was that he could tell, because I think he fought the Japs. And then he said there was just some things that weren't quite computing. I think a lot of guys, even obviously Patton, after the war realized that they got duped. And so when he was actually still active duty, he got a copy of Mein Kampf. And he started reading it. And then it's like if he didn't already suspect it, when he read Mein Kampf, it totally confirmed everything he suspected. He's like, holy shit. And then he started looking at who's running our military, who's running it. And then he realized, just like everybody else, all these Jews that were completely infiltrated in FDR's cabinet, who was running his War Department, everything. I mean, it's like, oh, wow, now I get it. And so, again, the white man always has to pay for the Jewish takeover for Greater Israel. And of course, Israel wasn't being created yet, but that's one of the things that was being propagated after the First World War. Now, and then of course, a lot of people don't know that Hitler had the Havara compact, where basically they were sending Jews to Palestine. You know, it didn't necessarily do him any good to kill the Jews. He just wanted to get them the fuck out of Germany. His original idea was to send him to Madagascar. And I'm going, well, if he had an opportunity with the Balfour Agreement to create Palestine, make a Jewish state, good, let's get him the fuck out of here. And he even set up a situation financially where he could take some money, grow it for him, and send him the fuck off. And actually, it was a better deal, because I think basically what it was is I think he kept the interest off their shit and then sent them there with a small stipend or something. I don't know exactly how. There's several books been written on it. But now that we're talking about finances, you know, obviously you're pretty much got your finger on the pulse with the BRICS movement. You know, is it really an alternative to the petrodollar, which challenges American supremacy? Is it a good alternative, or is it really what it is? It's the beginning of setting up a global government. And once they crash the American dollar, that's when they start forcing the CBDCs.
I don't quite see it that way. And in South Africa, the whites don't really worry too much about BRICS. You know, South Africa is run basically by globalist capitalism. Jews and English literally control most of the economy here.
And Chinese, too.
No, not the Chinese. Not the Chinese.
Really? I've heard they had a huge investment down there because the natural resources they need for the computer chips, a lot of it is in South Africa.
The Chinese, when I talk about the Chinese, I talk about what we see on the news and so forth. You don't see Chinese on the news, very rare. And to actually see Chinese physically, you have to go to a Chinese mall. Chinese are rare in South Africa. You don't see them much here.
They keep to themselves.
There aren't that many. There are much more Indians. Chinese are a small community compared to all the others. Tiny community.
I've heard there's a lot of Indians in South Africa, too. So, I mean, you guys got a fairly good-sized population there as well.
The Indians are about half the number of the whites. So you've got like 4.5 million whites, and you've got almost 2 million Indians, almost. So the Indians are the real Asians that we see. But about BRICS, you know, there are various global movements that have been started The non-aligned movement is one of them. The non-aligned movement, India played a big role in that. And in the time of the Cold War, you had like the West, and then you had the Warsaw Pact, the uh-huh. communists, right? And then, yes. then you got countries like India that started the thing of the non-aligned movement, that they're in the middle, that they aren't taking sides with either side. So this BRICS thing in many ways, the BRICS thing is seen as a type of non-aligned movement, sort of. There was, for example, that same Julius Malema, the one who's always calling for genocide and kill the Boer, and a British journalist questioned him and asked him about South Africa's stance on Russia and the war. And Malema said that with regard to the war, we are non-aligned, okay? But then he said that Russia is an ally of South Africa. So he's kind of ducking and diving. And the government is ducking and diving because the ANC, these blacks who are in power in South Africa, these blacks were funded by the Soviets. The Soviet Union, the Russians, are the ones who armed them, trained them, gave them everything they had. So mm-hmm. So this thing of BRICS, I've always seen BRICS as, because it's Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. I've always seen BRICS as a kind of a commie thing because Russia and China are really still, you know, you can argue, there are those who say communism fell, okay? But you can see that all the friends that the Soviet Union had, all of the friends that the Soviet Union had are still their friends. So you'll see that Russia is still aligned with China, and China's openly communist. It's still and aligned Iran. With... Sorry?
And Iran, too.
Okay. And then also North Korea. And you'll see that all of these countries worked together in the time of the Cold War. And they are still largely buddies. So BRICS in terms of trade, Russia's trade with South Africa is almost non-existent. Our biggest trading partners are China and Europe. Europe and China are our big trading partners, and then America below that. Russia hardly features. Hardly anyone trades with Russia here in South Africa. But the link between the blacks and the Russians is political, and it's from the time of the past. And those blacks, I don't know if you've probably never heard the story that I've told of Ian Smith of Rhodesia.
No.
Okay, Ian Smith was the Prime Minister of Rhodesia. He was the guy who rebelled against the British. Now, after Rhodesia became Zimbabwe, Ian Smith stayed in Zimbabwe, and he would sort of try to stand his ground in his way, but he had contact with all kinds of people, including black politicians, and in the 1980s. Ian Smith one day was talking to a black politician. He was in the black politician's office. And he asked the black politician, how is it that you became communists? What made you guys go for communism? So the black mm-hmm. guy actually said to him, well, the Russians took us to Cuba and they showed us communism there and we weren't impressed. Then the Russians took us to Russia and they showed us communism there and we weren't impressed. And then one day the Russians said to us, with this system, you can remain in power forever. And that's when we converted to communism. So the whole thing is that these blacks in Southern Africa, they know that They have dealings with the Russians because of those ideological and military links. And the other link that they have, the most important link they have, is that the Russians will sell them weapons or give them weapons anytime they want. And Richard Nixon, in that video that I did recently, I was reading out of Richard Nixon's book, The Real War. In Richard Nixon's book, The Real War, he has a whole section on South Africa. He writes a whole lot of detail about it. Then he talks about the Soviet Union. And he says that the Russians would like to precipitate a racial conflict, a race war. He uses those words. Would like to precipitate a race war in South Africa. Richard Nixon wrote that in 1981. And these blacks are more interested, the blacks who rule, okay? Understand this, the blacks who rule South Africa, who rule Zimbabwe, who rule Angola, who rule Mozambique, those blacks have never lost power. Never lost power. Those blacks, next year it will be, I can't remember, next year it might be 50 years. 50 years that the same political party has run Angola and has run, and same thing is true for Mozambique, former Portuguese colonies. 50 years of the same political party. Now, anybody who'd look at that would say that's a one-party state. But you won't see Jews or the Russians talk about a one-party state. If you go and you look at the people who rule Zimbabwe, they've now had elections now. And let me just think. Just give me a second. I just want to see. I'll just give you a number. Okay. This year, it's 43 years. 43 years of rule in Zimbabwe by the same political party. You will never hear Jews, Russians, or anybody, or blacks, or liberals, or anybody saying, but that is one part, that's a one-party state. And here we are in South Africa, and I'm telling you that South Africa is a one-party state, my friend. You just don't know it. It's just a lie that's been propagated. 'Cause next year we're going to have an election. Next year we're going to have an election in South Africa. And it'll be 30 years of black rule. And I'll bet you that the same political party, the ANC, will rule South Africa. I bet you. And you will hear everyone talking. They talk endlessly about the democracy in South Africa, yet the same political party rules you. These countries, when we whites fought these blacks, we said constantly, these blacks are communists and they want a one-party state. And it is a one-party state. All these countries are one-party states. But nobody will say
anything. Yeah, they're trying to do that here too, because that's another reason why they're bringing all these illegals in, because we're thinking that if they manage to rig this election again, and that son of a bitch is still in there, they're going to do a mass amnesty. And they have a precedent, because Reagan did it in 86 when he granted amnesty to 2 million Mexicans. So that was supposed to be a one-time deal, but that just sets a precedent. So it doesn't matter to say, oh, your own Ronald Reagan actually fucking passed that. So next thing you know, there'll be 20 million that get in there, and it will flip the electorate overnight. So, I mean, it's we're that close to becoming a complete authoritative power here as well. But, the uniparty doesn't matter, because we see with the Republicans in there, you get a handful of them that are actually trying to do something where the rest of them don't do shit. And so, you know, and they attack the ones that are actually trying to do something, whether it's Matt Gaetz or Marjorie Taylor Greene or Lauren Boebert, whatever. These are all in the minority. If you give me 55% of the Congress as an MTG or Lauren Boebert, we might actually get some shit done. You know, the biggest problem with I started the hashtag GOP is DOA because of the fact that they don't do anything. They'll debate. They'll bring up shit. Nothing ever happens. Where are the indictments and the impeachments of Alejandro Mayorkas and all these other fuckers, or Christopher Ray, nothing. Now, you could arguably say, well, they want to make sure to do all the homework before they do that, so that way they don't get out of the impeachment. Okay? But by the time you finish dicking around, it's not going to matter. Because what they'll do is, if Biden gets in again, they'll just get rid of that guy and then put in a fresh face, and then you got to start the process all over. I mean, I read something somewhere. What was it? Britain hasn't had any type of say in the prime minister, what, the last 30, 40 years? Because as soon as they start to pick up, they just hurt, kick them out, put a new one in, so that people never get a chance to even have an opinion on them.
Wow, interesting. Interesting. Well, these blacks, what I want to tell you about these blacks is these blacks steal elections, and they are here for power, and they will kill, and they kill, and they will kill, and they have killed anyone else who threatens their power. But Jews and liberals are constantly, oh, we're a democracy, yet nothing changes, and nothing will change. And these blacks are tied to the Russians, and that's because weapons are the most important thing for them. Because the West might not sell them weapons when they need them, but the Russians will. The Russians and the Chinese will. And blacks have used it. In Zimbabwe, when Mugabe was destroying the white farmers, he was ordering weapons from Russia and China. He was buying weapons that was being flown in, and he was arming the blacks. So, you know, these blacks have got deeper ties to the Russians than you know. And these blacks see the Russians as the communists, the same communists that they used to be. So if you watch that video that I put out where I interviewed that black, then you'll start to understand more. I put it out recently the other day. But I've got more, because I interviewed blacks and I spoke to blacks, and I recorded it at the time when I was writing my book. Those things that the blacks were telling me are the same things that blacks used to tell our military and our police when they caught them. You know, it's not like we whites don't know what's going on. We know, because we captured lots of blacks and we asked them. And we found out what they were doing, where were they going, and everything. And the stories those blacks will tell you is something completely different to the liberal nonsense, liberal Jew crap that you see in the mass media.
Yeah, we see that here. They always just say, oh, this is a threat to our democracy. Democracy is majority rule, dumbass. So, I mean, seriously, I chastise especially Republicans that always say that shit. I'm like, oh, it's a threat to our democracy. I'm like, obviously, you don't belong in this party if you think we're a democracy. You know, because democracy is mob rule. 51% rules over the minority. And, you know, and that's another thing, too, is that John C. Calhoun of South Carolina was also one time, he was a senator and a one-time vice president, was chastised for being a supporter of slavery and this, that, and the other. But he had written a treatise on why he supported that. Because of the fact that and one of the last things he had written before he died was basically how the minority can still hold its own against the majority. So how the 49% can still hold up against the 51%. And so it's a very interesting treatise to read. And again, he gets chastised because some of his positions. But, you know, we shouldn't dismiss these people's works. That's why I'm really against any type of censorship, because we want to make sure whatever works that person produced should be in its original form as much as possible, as the author intended it. You know, when people go up and say, oh, we got Beatles are remixed and this, that, and the other. Dude, I don't want to listen to a remixed version of the Beatles. I want to hear it as they originally intended it in the 1960s. Yeah, it sounds like it was made in the 60s. But that's what the reference in which they wrote it at the time. So if you're going to go and change music because you want to make it sound more modern, then that's another problem. I have digital books. I mean, they got censored versions of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn now because it says nigger in it. And so that's the problem I have with digital media. If you've got printed media, once it's printed, it's there. It's you know, to use a Christian term, it's gospel. You know, but when you have a digital version, they can go do it. Look at it with Mein Kampf. You know, when the copyright finally expired on Mein Kampf, for the first time in 70 some odd years, it was reprinted in Germany. But of course, it was a watered down version where it was basically cut everything out about the Jews. But the funniest thing was, is they printed like what, 3,000 or 4,000 copies. It sold out in days. And so they had said, fuck, we're going to have to issue a second edition because the fact that it sold out, we didn't think anybody cared. You know, when you tell people they can't read something, all of a sudden make it somewhat available, you know, that's like, okay, I'm going to give you a Beatles album, but I'm only going to give you 7 of the 14 tracks they recorded. Well, people are going to want the other 7 tracks, you know? So it's a natural human condition. You tell somebody they can't have something by putting a print advisory sticker on it and say you have to be 18 to buy this, kids are going to want to buy it. Because you're like, what don't you want me to hear, you know? And so that's the thing that really gets me, is that any type of medium that's put out should not be censored in any way. It should be produced in the way that the author intended it to be produced, so you can hear it in its original version. Whether you want to attack it or not, you can't have a full criticism of it if you don't have the full writ in front of you. So it's easy to go and dismiss a book if it's the Cliff Notes version. I want the full novel. I don't want the Cliff Notes and attack the Cliff Notes, because things are taken out of context when you have Cliff Notes.
Make no mistake, if the Jews get hold of books, they change things and remove things and modify things. That is also why.
They're already doing it. They're already doing it to classical movies. I just saw the original film, The French Connection, from the early 1970s with Gene Hackman and Roy Scheider. There's already some scenes in there that have been taken out quietly. So what gets me is most of the films that are out were either written by, starring, or produced all by Jewish movie houses, right? They were talking about banning Gone with the Wind, who was directed by a Jew and also ran through MGM, which is Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. So I thought there was a golden rule that you're not supposed to fuck over fellow Jews, right? Does that apply to dead Jews? Because the fact that if you can fuck over a dead Jew, then the rule is half-heartedly, isn't it? Because many of those Jews brought this stuff to this point to be able to have the revision they have now. And you want to go and destroy the work that previous Jew had done to even get you to the point where you could criticize it? See, it doesn't make sense to me. They eat their own.
Jews do have moments when they go after each other, but it's not common, but it does happen.
It's rare.
The only time I knew here in South Africa was when it came to like a Jew that cheats a Jew, but it's a large amount of money. If it's a very large amount of money, then the one Jew will get another one to kill him. But it doesn't happen often.
Yeah, because I brought up the fact that they were trying to censor some of the Bugs Bunny cartoons. There was some where he's in blackface, and they were trying to make it as being culturally insensitive. I'm like, that's funny shit, because Warner Brothers were Jews that put that out for Looney Tunes. Plus, it was made for service members during World War II as just easy comic relief. And the funniest thing is, Mel Blanc, who voiced Bugs Bunny and many of the characters, was Jew himself. So, I mean, where does it end?
Jews have crawled all over American society. You've been colonized by Jews in a big way. And
they're such a small minority. But, I mean, like you talked about the movie stars and stuff. I'm amazed at how many movie stars, I look them up and find out they're Jewish. And really, the one thing that's actually been complimentary is Wikipedia. Wikipedia oftentimes puts the fact if they're Jewish, they put that in there. And so, and which is funny because Wikipedia is run by Jews. So they're bragging about it. But now I heard that they wanted to start softening that up and not mention that some of these guys are Jews because they don't want to be exposed. But the same stroke, now they're having bragging rights because they are Jewish. So, I mean, you can't have it both ways, but they're trying to have their cake and eat it too. And like the analogy you talked about, they want the cake and the crumbs too.
Well, regarding Wikipedia, there are Jews in South Africa who I've gone to their Wikipedia pages, and in the beginning, when I went, and I'm talking like, let's say, 8 years ago, and you go there and you go and read up about that person, you would see openly that that person is Jewish. And then later, they have their Wikipedia page changed, because it's easy to get someone to go and edit a Wikipedia page. So, and then they remove that Jewish stuff from there. A case in point is the woman called Helen Ziller. In South Africa, the whites think that Helen Ziller is a white Christian woman, but she's not. She's actually Jewish. Both her parents are Jews. They fled from Hitler's Germany, and she's a communist, but she pretends to be a liberal. And they vote for her. They vote for her. She's highly respected in South Africa. Highly respected. Helen Ziller. A Jew communist. An actual traitor. An actual enemy of apartheid. An enemy of apartheid. She even jumps on stage and she dances. And she dances with the blacks. And she openly tells the blacks, we were on your side, you know, against apartheid. She's the only white, the only white person who boasts about that openly, and it basically means that if you were against apartheid, that you were a traitor to the whites. Now you'll find that there are a lot of such people. Most of them are English speaking, but there are some there are some stupid Afrikaans people who also were taken in by that crap, and you know, they love to rave about their anti-apartheid stance, but actually anyone who was anti-apartheid was a traitor to the whites. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, there's a couple of channels that were out there. The Noticer that was on Telegram, they must have caught him or some shit, because I think his account's been derezzed now, because after so much time of inactivity, they delete the account. But he had taking screenshots of many of these tweets of these guys that claim that they're whites, and they're like, oh, come on, white people or fellow white people, blah, blah, blah. And at some point, they try to be sympathizers and shit, but then they always have to have some tweet somewhere that says, yeah, I'm Jewish, I'm proud of it, or, well, I'm a Jew and I don't really practice, or, I mean, it's pretty obvious, you know. It's like, during the lockdowns, I saw that Richard Marx was doing a podcast with other musicians, and one of his first people he brought on was Paul Stanley of Kiss. I'm like, what the fuck does Richard Marx have in common with Paul Stanley? And I suspect that Richard Marx is probably a Jew because of his last name, right? And I was like, well, you know, let's see. And then I saw on there, the noticer, that yeah, he says he's a non-religious Jew, but the bottom line is he basically was saying that you know, hey, white people, we got to learn to get along, this, that, and blah, blah, blah. But I basically admitted he was a Jew. And I'm like, what the fuck? And it really pissed me off. And I stopped listening to his music after that. I'm like, you know, I suspect it, but you really confirmed it. So, again, and of course, majority of these artists' listening base are all whites. When they finally realize, hey, we don't agree with what you're saying, or with this, that, and the other, we stop buying their shit, stop buying their albums, and stop seeing their shows. Guess what? They go belly up. We got to do that with other individuals as well.
Yeah, I like the stuff that was happening with Bud Light and all that. All that stuff is awesome that you guys are doing.
Have you seen what happened with that? Billy Bush, one of the family members of the Bush beer company who started Budweiser and all that, has offered to buy the brand back because the Anheuser-Busch InBev brand has destroyed it because of this. And they've lost so many dollars from it. They've sold off a lot of their side breweries, like Shock Top and a bunch of those things. They've sold off a lot of their other labels to the fact that because they're hemorrhaging money. And so Billy Bush has offered to buy the brand back. Same with George Lucas. There's rumors that Lucas is putting together an offer to buy back Star Wars because Disney has destroyed the brand name.
Oh, wow. Wow, that is awesome. It's awesome. No, these people must lose money. Businesses must lose money. Jews must lose money. No, it's good. It's good.
People have a right to protest.
People have a right to protest.
Right. I would say if you're a good litigation attorney and you're doing these business deals, you should make sure you got a rider in there that, hey, if you go and destroy this brand name or I've seen in some cases, I just saw that an independent brewery that had been absorbed into a conglomerate is now being just totally wiped away after 120 some odd years. Like, oh, we don't even know how to market anymore, so we're just going to kill the whole brand altogether. That at least whoever is a member of the original family that started that, if they have the opportunity, that there should be a rider in a deal that says that we want to buy it back. And so the brand doesn't get trashed. It's like, we don't care if we make a lot of money off of it. This is something our grandfather created. It defines us. So I think a lot of people need to be assertive in these deals and say, we want to reserve a rider. If you fuck this up, we have the opportunity to buy it back. And I think that should be paramount these days. The people just want to, someone makes something, their son gets, I don't know anything about this business. Fuck it, I'm just going to sell it off and make money. Fine, maybe the grandson goes, you know, that was grandpa's brand. I want to buy it back. And they have the opportunity to do that without trying to fleece them for a bunch of money. You know what I mean? They need to put some sort of protocol on there that a family member can buy the brand back because they think it's not being used in the right way.
No, I think those protests and those boycotts are awesome. Those boycotts are fantastic. You guys must go for it like crazy.
Yeah, Target's lost a lot of money because of the tuck anywhere fucking swimwear. Oh, that really fucked them big time. And then some of the other places. But, you know, I was just at Kroger yesterday getting some groceries, and the lady that was checking me out at the counter was wearing this pride button shit. And I'm going, whoa, what the fuck? You know, I don't need to know your proclivities or your preferences, you know, especially this being a union shop. I don't think that's appropriate that people wearing the apron is, but it basically sounds like Kroger endorses this shit. Can you imagine me having a swastika on a fucking Kroger apron if I was a cashier? Oh man, there would be huge demands to get me fired.
Yeah, absolutely. No, what you've got is Jews are quietly creating the values for our societies. They are pushing values onto people, and they are changing white society so that things which – and they're doing it deliberately. They're doing it deliberately for their benefit and for the benefits of their goals, because they know that that whites are going to win otherwise.
Yes, definitely. All right, Jan, we really appreciate you coming on and spending time with us. Like I said, we always – you're a fountain of information, brother. I mean, you always have some interesting perspective on not only what's going on in South Africa, but what's going on in the West overall. I mean, my listeners always learn something every time you come on. We always appreciate you sharing your grace with us, brother.
Thank you very much, Sonny. It's an honor as always, and I'm sure we can do it again.
Tell our listeners the best way to find you and to follow you on the web.
My website is historyreviewed.com. And the other website is africancrisis.info. And from there, you can find me on BitChute, Odyssey, and even Telegram. I've got channels there as well. You can look up History Reviewed on Telegram as well. You'll find me.
Awesome. All right, brother. We'll get to talk to you again soon. And like I said, when I get a chance to do another good roundtable discussion, I give an opportunity for you to join in just because of the fact that we got a lot of great minds that can come together and really might inspire a young chap to want to take up that baton and run with it. I mean, there's many things that I've listened to over the years that's inspired me, and I'm here where I'm at today, and I'm just a nobody, you know? So, and I've had people tell me that I've influenced them. So I want to make sure I get as much information out there as possible, because there could be one guy out there that says, you know what, I've had enough. And he's inspired, and maybe during an interview says, yeah, I heard this guy, Jan Lamprecht, on a radio show, and some things that he said just clicked one day, and I said, boom, I got it. And then he just that you're the gateway drug that he needed to go on his journey of enlightenment. So like I said, we have to use this medium while it's still available before they take it from us.
I totally agree with you. That's the way to go, man. And more and more whites are waking up, and they seem to be moving faster and faster. I think the pace is picking up. So we must just all put our shoulders into it and push for all we're worth. I think that we're still going to defeat our enemies, no question about it.
Well, you know, Thomas Jefferson said it best, that a well-educated electorate will always make the right decision. The problem is they're trying to control all the information, so you cannot make a correct decision, or you create the decision you want them to take. So that's why it's easy to criticize a president because you're not there. But if they tell them A, B, and C and purposely omit D, then they get the results that they want. And then you go, well, why the fuck would that guy do this or that guy do that? Well, dude, if he wasn't given all the information, you know, he was given the prescribed response that they were expecting. So there you go.
You're dead right. You're dead right. I agree.
Cool. All right. Talk to you again soon, brother, and stay safe.
Thanks very much again, Sonny. Take care. Okay. Bye.
All right.
And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, thank the whites.